Translation: the upper portion of the body, though crowned with the silk turban, is only a heavy burden if not bowed down before the personality of Godhead, who can award mukti, freedom. And the hands, though decorated with glittering bangles, are like those of a dead man if not engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead. Hari. It's kind of a lengthy purport, so please pay attention. Let's go through it nicely together. There's some very interesting point which Prabhupada presents here. So let's see if we can kind of divide them according to the messages Prabhupada wishes to deliver. Purport. As stated herein before, there are three kinds of devotees of the Lord. The first class devotee does not at all see anyone who is not in the service of the Lord. But the second class devotee makes distinctions between devotees and non-devotees. The second class devotee are therefore meant for preaching work. And as referred in the above verse, they must loudly preach the glories of the Lord. The second class devotee accepts disciples from the section of third class devotees or non-devotees. Sometimes the first class devotee also comes down to the category of the second class devotee for preaching work. But the common man who is expected to become at least a third class devotee is advised herein to visit the temple of the Lord and bow down before the deity, even though he may be a very rich man or even a king with a silk turban or crown. The Lord is the Lord of everyone, including the great kings and emperors, and men who are rich in the estimation of mundane people must therefore make it a point to visit the temple of the Lord Sri Krishna and regularly bow down before the deity. The Lord in the temple, the Lord in the temple, in the worshipable form, is never to be considered to be made of stone or wood. For the Lord in his Archa incarnation, as the deity in the temple, shown immense favor to the fallen souls by his auspicious presence. By the hearing process, as mentioned here and before, this realization of the presence of the Lord in the temple is made possible. As such, the first process in routine work of devotional service, hearing, is the essential point. Hearing by all classes of devotees from the authentic sources like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is essential. The common man who is puffed up with his material position and does not bow down before the deity of the Lord in the temple, or who defies temple worship without any knowledge of the science, must know that his so-called turban is crown or crown will only succeed in further drowning him in the water of the ocean of material existence. A drowning man with a heavy weight on his head is sure to go down more swiftly than those who have no heavy weight. A foolish puffed up man defies the signs of God and says that God has no meaning for him. But when he is in the grip of God's law and is caught by some disease like cerebral thrombosis, that godless man sinks into the ocean of nescience by the weight of his material acquisition. Advancement of material science without God consciousness is a heavy load on the head of a human society, and so one must take heed of this great warning. The common man, if he has no time to worship the Lord, may at least engage his hands for a few seconds in washing or sweeping the Lord's temple. Maharaj Prataparudra, the greatly powerful king of Orissa, was always very busy with heavy state responsibilities. Yet he made it a point to sweep the temple of the Lord Jagannath at Puri once a year during the festival of the Lord. The idea is that however important a man one may be, he must accept the supremacy of the Supreme Lord. This God consciousness will help a man even in his material prosperity. Maharaj Prataparudra's subordination before Lord Jagannath made him a powerful king, so much so that even the great Pathan in his time could not enter into Orissa on account of the powerful Maharaj Prataparudra. And at least Maharaj Prataparudra was graced by Lord Sri Chaitanya on the very grounds of his acceptance of subordination to the Lord of the universe. So even though a rich man's wife has glittering bangles made of gold on her hands, she must engage herself in rendering service to the Lord. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyanam jana salakayam chakshurum militam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha nama om vishnu padaya krishna prastaya bhutale shrimate bhakti vedanta swami niti namine namaste saraswate deve gauravani pracharine nirvishesha shunyavadi paschatya deshatarine jai shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadhara shri vasadi gaura bhakta vrinda hare krishna hare krishna 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 hare 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 rama hare rama 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 hare hare I'm going to repeat the translation again. One who has not listened to the messages about the upper portion of the body, though crowned with a silk turban, is only a heavy burden if not bowed down before the personality of Godhead, who can award mukti, freedom. And the hands, though decorated with the glittering bangles, are like those of a dead man, if not engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead. Hari. So I'd like to ask devotees, Bhakti Vikash Maharaj has got this interesting kind of a habit. Sometimes when he goes through purports, he has a tendency to asking the crowd or the devotees what they get from the purport. So maybe we can get two or three points which stuck out for individuals. Just one term, one word, or a simple small sentence. Discrimination between three types of devotees as presented in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, for instance, yes. Vishal Prabhu?
The deity is non-different to Krishna.
Importance of worshipping the lordships, the deities. Any other points? Adiguru Prabhu?
Doing some menial service just for a few minutes.
How just a small menial service just for a couple of minutes can actually bring the grace of the Lord, specifically in the pastimes of King Prataparudra in connection with Lord Jagannath and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Govinda Prabhu?
If you're not serving the Lord, you're as good as dead.
If you're not serving the Lord, you're good as dead, yes. Thank you so much. Anything from the lady's side?
And with all the opulences around, if one does not serve the Lord, all the riches is useless, all is dead.
Yes, all the opulences of this material world, if they're not utilized for the service of the Lord, are kind of useless, including the body. So all of these points, one thing which really kind of grabbed my attention when I was preparing and reading is that Prabhupada mentioned this sentence, advancement of material science without God consciousness is a heavy load on the head of human society, and so one must take heed of this great warning. So a couple of days ago, we've been discussing with Govinda Prabhu about science. And one devotee, once I heard this kind of a, he recommended me this question, or basically Prabhupada memories. And I can't exactly remember which devotee it was, Prabhupada's disciple. And Prabhupada got to ask a question by a journalist. What is the greatest scientific achievement of Bharatvarsha or India presented for the benefit of the human society in this present day and age? And in your own head, you can go through a variety of things which India kind of presented to the world, right? You can speak about Ayurveda, you can discuss about a variety of architecture, astronomy, astrology, variety of things, mathematics. But what Prabhupada says was very, very much on point. Prabhupada just said, the greatest scientific achievement presented by India or Bharatvarsha is actually Guru Parampara. The greatest science which India presented to the world at large is Guru Parampara. And the reason why he said this, then Prabhupada explained that the goal of science is actually to make your life easier, to make your life better, to make you happy in your life, to bring some kind of a prosperity to the society at large. Correct? Would you say that whatever exploration or science or knowledge we accumulating ultimately is there for the benefit of human society. So if it's not only a theory, but if it's that theory is applied in a practice, in conclusion, that theory should somehow or another make your life better. In the modern day and age, you see that sometimes this scientific achievement is, rather than creating some kind of a prosperity in the society, it's creating rather some kind of an illusion of prosperity. So we are sacrificing one type of illusionary prosperity, but yet we are losing some of the very principal fundamental needs of the human society. For instance, interaction. For those who do Sankirtan, many times happened to me that when you're on the street, you stop someone, and these people, they're actually lacking skills of it, or interaction skills to deal with you, to speak with you. They just can't have a conversation. They always have 24/7 these phones in front of them, computers in front of them, variety of technology, which in their words is creating bonds with others, which are in different parts of the world. But rather what they're doing, they're separating you. So it's again illusion of science. So in continuation, Srila Prabhupada was indicating that the Guru Parampara is the greatest scientific achievement of Bharatvarsha or India or Sanatan Dharma for a reason that it actually can take you out of this material world. Because the goal of science is to somehow or another make your life easier, make your life better, but still within the realm of this material world. But what the Guru Parampara is actually doing is the knowledge, the information, the science which is descending down ultimately from Krishna is allowing you to exit this bubble or this egg-shaped universe which kind of contains you. It's like a cell, right? This body is like a cell which limits the soul. What the technological advancement of Guru Parampara allows you to actually get out of this cell. So that is the greatest scientific achievement presented by India. Spiritual master or lineage or spiritual masters. So as devotees been presenting, Sankirtan Priya Prabhu mentioned that first part of the purport deals with the discrimination. When we speak about discrimination in the 21st century, it's a big taboo topic, right? It's a big no-no topic. You should not discriminate. We should see everything as one big khichri. Everyone is equal to each other. There is no discrimination. Yet in here, we can see how Srila Prabhupada is discriminating. He's discriminating between first-class devotee, second-class devotee, third-class devotee, and also fourth-class, or those which are non-devotees. But when we're speaking about discrimination, we should always have one thing in mind, and that is what are the factors or the premises of that specific discrimination. Discrimination mentioned here in the purport, in the first section of the purport, is based purely on spiritual advancement. It doesn't speak about your body, doesn't speak about where you're from, the color of your skin, your gender, your orientation, or whatever. Doesn't speak about that. It speaks about spiritual elevation. It speaks about spiritual saturation. And what is in center of that advancement of spiritual life? Your connection with Krishna. So the first discrimination or this discrimination presented in this purport is based on how much, how deeply, how strongly you are connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's it. That's the first and foremost discrimination that the Gaudiya Vaishnavas are presenting to the world. We can see that in the past, in the form of our Gaudiya Vaishnavism, in the history, many of our predecessors, acharyas, including Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, been actually fighting with wrong type of discrimination. Kartik Chandra Prabhu, this was, correct me if I'm wrong, Sunday, right? He gave a Sunday class. So Kartik Chandra Prabhu was very much also explaining that how there is a discrimination in this modern world, but is based on wrong premises, on the bodily premises. But here, Srila Prabhupada is saying no. Should be there, but based on spiritual understanding. Next of the points which Prabhupada is emphasizing in this purport is the importance of deity worship. Again, in In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami says that deity worship is for neophytes. And Prabhupada says the same thing, right? Deity worship is for neophytes. Yet, what was one of the principal activities which the six Goswamis been doing in Vrindavan? Establishing temples, establishing places of worship. So if someone who's a pure devotee, either from the angle of Nitya Siddha or Sadhana Siddha, why he's emphasizing something which is for neophytes? So you see, I was thinking about this point, why kind of a Archana Vidhi or form of deity worship is very much predominant within our society. And the answer is, it presents a localized aspect of your worship. It presents focused, intense place within your sadhana, which allows you to connect with the Lord. So think about, at least my vision on kind of a deity worship is that it's a point of saturation. Saturation in the sense that you developing relationship with the focused person which is on the altar. You're developing relationship with Radha Gokulananda, Sitaram Lakshman, Hanuman, Gaur Nitai. And when that relationship becomes saturated within your heart, the next step after the saturation is sharing it with others. With the focus, with understanding that through the eyes of the scriptures, with the help of the Shastra Chakshush, you can understand, yes, God is a person, but simultaneously He's present everywhere. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat, it is mentioned that the Lord manifests within this age of Kali in variety of forms. One of the forms is obviously in the presence of His holy names, then as a Vaishnavas, then as Tulsi Devi, and the fourth one I can't remember. Anyone knows? What is the fourth? I mean, there are a variety of things which the Lord presents Himself. Excuse me? Ganga, or sacred rivers. Yes. So you can see how the path, or how the journey of Krishna consciousness is going through variety of angles. First, it is said there's this localized aspect of the Lord on the altar which you can develop relationship. But simultaneously, the Lord is present in a variety of objects or paraphernalias, specifically the devotees. So again, let's take it somehow to Sankirtan, to book distribution. So when you, as a devotee, Harinam Sankirtan, when you develop relationship with the Supreme Lord, you become the carrier of that bhakti. You become that carrier of that sadhana. You become a carrier of that relationship. And then the next step, you just go outside and try to share it. And you will become that pivotal point for others to become Krishna conscious. Just recently, this Saturday, we had a wonderful retreat with people which we met during the Sankirtan festival, during the winter marathon. And there was around 75 people which came for that retreat. Completely fresh, completely new people. So we've been very much trying to help all these souls to kind of come. You see, the reason why these festivals or what these retreats are very important is that what they create is samskaras. When we are here in the temple, we are surrounded by spiritual samskaras. You have pictures, spiritual pictures, you have the lordships, you have Srila Prabhupada, you have devotees, you have incense, you have variety of paraphernalias which are directly connected with the worship of the Lord and with Krishna consciousness. And then when you allow this, when you give this opportunity to others to tap into that pool of samskaras, it will create a deep imprint. I remember when I was starting in my Krishna consciousness, I was kind of in and out. Right? I entered the temple, it was wonderful, it was good fun. Devotees been very welcoming, prasadam was first class. And then I went outside and I tried to seek this rasa, if there's an option for this rasa somewhere else. And it took me on and off like 3-4 years to kind of come to conclusion that no, unfortunately you can't find it anywhere else. So this, again, this deity worship is a form of deep spiritual samskaras which are presented to all these Vaishnavas and all these devotees, spiritual seekers. But even if you're not like Brahmanical or in terms of not initiated in the Brahma Gayatri mantras, one of the worships of the Lord is actually dandavats or pranams. So even just by offering prayers or dandavats, obeisances to the Lord, it's actually part of the Pancharatrika Vidhi worship. So one of the angas of worship of the Supreme Lord are pranams and are obeisances. So just because you are a few meters away from the Lord or not exactly on the altar doesn't mean you're not worshipping the Lord. By your obeisances, by your prayers, by your glorifications, it's no different. Like, you are part of the worship of the Supreme Lord. And this is a fact. So coming back to the point of allowing others to be connected with this. So this retreat was actually very nice. I'm just going to share a few points. So people come from very long distance. Some people came from Norwich, Southampton, Sheffield. I mean, it's like 2.5 hours of driving, and you know, they came. There was one mother which I spoke to during that retreat, and she said she left her home 7 a.m. in the morning, and the retreat started kind of at 10 a.m. So it was amazing how people actually have that hankering for spirituality. They have the desire to actually be connected with the Supreme Lord. And they came here to the manor, they had darshan of the lordships. Some of them actually said that the most intense room for them was actually Prabhupada darshan rooms. And I said that, yeah, that's amazing that you're actually really connected with that fact, that these places are saturated with... And then I explained that whenever a pure devotee or someone who's a Uttama Bhakta, whenever he travels, he turns that place into a Tirtha or a sacred place. Why? Because based on the intensity of his devotion or his sadhana bhakti, he transforms locations rather than he is transformed by that location. So this is one of the differences of Uttama Madhyama and Kanishtha, that Uttama Adhikaris, they, in first point, they don't have a discrimination. But as mentioned by Prabhupada, they absorb themselves within a discrimination because to facilitate the art of preaching. So Srila Prabhupada was that Uttama Adhikari, that Uttama Bhakta, to facilitate it by preaching, by stepping down to the zone of Madhyama for the activity of outreach. So it was a wonderful retreat. We had a good time, and people been very happy. Govinda Prabhu came, variety of Sankirtan devotees, Bishal, Bhakta Roman, Sankit, David Prabhu, all of these wonderful Vaishnavas came forward, Roman Prabhu, Smarahari, and it was a wonderful time. And they've been really engaged, and they've been chanting, taking prasadam. Mother Visharka, she came and graced us, and she opened the retreat with wonderful words of wisdom. Over 100 books been distributed. We did it free of charge, but nevertheless, all the expenses that we invested into this retreat came back, as these wonderful souls felt that they would like to give back again. So it was very nice. So I think it's for Sankirtan, this is kind of a step forward that we're going to carry on with this, with the blessings of these Vaishnavas. With all of you, we would like to carry on and continue doing these retreats and continue kind of connecting these souls to our temple. But that was slightly going away from the class, from the presentation. So one of the points again, which Srila Prabhupada's mentioned here in the end of the purport, is the pastimes of King Prataparudra. And as Adiguru Prabhu mentioned very, very nicely, that even the smallest service offered to the Supreme Lord will be never forgotten by Krishna. It will never be forgotten. So when we're outside on the streets, again, Sankirtan, many times you come across different personalities, different denominations, and the way of outreach of different denominations is through the angle of fear, unfortunately. Right? Either you do like this, either you worship like this, or you're eternally damned. Right? You go to hell for eternity, or there'll be a lot of hellish activities present to you after you die. So the way you're accepting kind of a spiritual life should not be through the angle of fear. Srimad Bhagavatam presents that fear is the first step. You can be afraid. If you have some kind of understanding of karma, then naturally you will start avoiding certain sinful activities, not eating meat or not participating in consuming things which are intoxicating to your mind and to your body, because you understand the consequences. So the first activity of some kind of a spiritual upliftment is the causality. And naturally with causality, based on your current stage of consciousness, it invokes fear within your heart. But you shouldn't stay like that. The next step or the next destination of someone who's afraid is that he develops a duty based on his bhajana kriya, based on the process of bhajan. So when you start interacting with Vaishnavas and with the process of sadhana bhakti, bhajan develops. And somehow or another, we come to a point when bhajan turns into duty, right? You go on the altar based on the duty because, you know, Krishna may be hungry. You develop your bhajana kriya based on duty to your spiritual master. You develop bhajan based on duty to the community, to the Vaishnavas. But again, this is not the end game. That duty, at one point, should and will transform into bhakti, into love. You wake up for morning program not because you're living in a temple and you have to, and if you don't, there's that X mark in your morning schedule that you haven't attended, but it become activity of love, in a sense that, oh, I'm not going to see Krishna today. What I'm going to do? How my day is going to progress? Oh, I have to cook because Krishna is actually hungry, you know? So that duty, that fear, ultimately has to transform into love. Within our life, we have this Swadharma and Dharma, or Sanatana Dharma. And it's presented here by Prabhupada purpose in a connection with King Prataparudra. So the Swadharma of this King Prataparudra was that he was a king. He was governing the state of Orissa, very powerful king. But can anyone tell me from the what was the actual position or rupa of King Prataparudra? Is it mentioned in the what's the name of this book which presents the in Gauragonadesha Deepika, exactly. Is it mentioned? Does anyone know what is the rupa of King Prataparudra? What is his original form? Govinda Prabhu, if you can do the quick research for us. So you can see even here that such a elevated personality like King Prataparudra, he understood the need that spiritual activities are in the forefront. And as the verse indicates on its own, silk turban, which represents kind of a kingly order, is useless if it doesn't bound in front of the majesty of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All these material paraphernalias and all this knowledge and all this wealth which we may accumulate throughout our lifetimes is only useless if it's not understood its connection with the Supreme Lord. All these bangles, all this gold is useless if it's not in connection or if it's not offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Indra Dumna Maharaj. Can Smarahari has a mic? Maybe he can share.
King Indra Dumna, the person who worshipped Nilamadava and then Lord Jagannath.
Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shri Sisi Tarakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shri Shivonita ki jai. Yes, Smarahari Prabhu?
Indra Dumna Maharaj, the king, was involved in the Jagannath. How Jagannath appeared the past time.
King Indra Dumna, the one who was involved in the carving and the pastime of manifestation of Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra. So it's interesting, right? A personality who was many, many millennia, many yugas ago present in the form of King Indra Dumna was yet present again to facilitate the pastime of Lord Chaitanya in his pastimes in Orissa, in Jagannath Puri. So thank you for that. Govinda Prabhu, you wanted to share something?
No.
So in conclusion of this verse, I'm not going to speak that much. We can open it up for a discussion. Adi Guru Prabhu?
Some time ago, I was thinking that the only regret I had from my early days of Krishna consciousness was that we weren't trained in deity worship, deity worship was, I think it's more balanced now, but when we joined, this statement you mentioned, deity worship is for neophytes. That was kind of preached to us. You've got to get out on the street and distribute books, and this is for the third-class devotees. But actually now, and there's, you know, we could discuss this point, because it's not actually, it's a qualified statement. Because in Indian culture, everyone worships deities, the Mayavadis, the Karmis, etc. So, but our deity worship is for the highest devotees, actually. And Prabhupada said the Pujari is the most fortunate person in the world. He said that in 1977. And we see that the Goswamis and everybody, they were totally absorbed in worshipping their deity. And to go on the altar, you've got to have the highest qualification to dress Radha Krishna. I mean, I know a lot of Pujaris, they dress Skorni Thai or, you know, and they, in Soho Street, some devotees never dress Radha Landanishwara. It's only for a few, you know. So I think that statement and the mood of, you know, that statement needs to be discussed and qualified a bit more.
Yeah, thank you for that point. I can tell definitely for myself that deity worship is something which actually gives me strength, gives me saturation of kind of a mode of goodness. Because, you know, when you do book distribution or general in life, things can get quite passionate, right? You have to run here, you have to do this, you have to make all these different variety of phone calls just to facilitate, for instance, the Yuga Dharma. And that requires sometimes the mode of passion. But I know that at least a couple of times a week, I need some kind of a connection with our lordships just to kind of put me down so I can really go deeply in the bhajan, right? Dressing the Lord, offering variety of paraphernalias, at least feel like a brahmana for a moment, right? Utilizing these variety of mantras. So I think Sankirtan or Harinam Sankirtan and deity worship is actually the most blissful and beautiful combination which I can personally imagine in ISKCON. So I found it very saturating, very beautiful, and really grounds me in very, very wonderful and ecstatic way to actually continue my service. And what's the first thing when the Sankirtan devotee, what does he do when he comes back to the temple? Right? First thing, he comes and bows down in front of Prabhupada, in front of the lordships. So I would say those pujaris which give the fuel to Sankirtan devotees, right, to go out. So I have great respect for pujaris and those people which facilitate the worship of the Supreme Lord. And definitely, we don't mean that they are neophytes. No, they're facilitators. They're facilitators for those facilitating the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but same time facilitating the spiritual advancement of individuals as well. Yes, Adiguru Prabhu? Maybe Prabhu can have a mic.
Just one point is that if there's just temples and deity worship without Shravanam and Kirtanam, then they eventually all, you know, there's so many temples in India, most of them are all rotting and falling apart because there's no Shravanam Kirtanam. And only some of the very big established ones, the deity worship is going on nicely. So that's why it's emphasized so much. That's one point, for example. The Shravanam Kirtanam, the Bhagavat Marg, it's all you really need. But like the deity worship regulates our life. Mm. And where would we be, you know, without?
Definitely. Definitely, yes. When we go on the streets, I mean, how many times I smelled like weed all over the place, no jokes. People are just smoking marijuana all the time. And then you're speaking to someone and the person's got like literally a joint in his mouth and you just try to present a Bhagavad Gita to him. So yeah, it's not always a clean place. And you're standing in front of a meat shop and people are drunk. I got spit on by a drunkard, you know. I got shout on by this guy, where was been Northampton, completely person who'd been completely delusional, just been shouting at you. So all these intensity of tamaguna and mode of passion, yeah, it's not always easy. But then you put on your nice pujari cloth, you put your wonderful tilak, you know, you're nice and clean. You sit down. You do the puja, and that's beautiful. And that really kind of grounds you in this, in the path of bhakti. And God knows we really need that. So pujari services are very important. If you desire to preach, you have to have a foundation to preach. And you need to know the person for whose pleasure you're preaching. So you need to know that how Radha Gokulananda, how they look. You need to have the picture, the saturation within your consciousness. And then when the darkest times on your and your outrage happens, that you know for whom you're doing all of this. You're doing it for the pleasure of the Lordships. So thank you for that point, Adi Guru Prabhu. If there are any points, any questions, anything devotees wish to share, please do it now. Rasaraj Krishna Prabhu.
Thank you for the class, Prabhu. Just wondering, what do we do, what's the etiquette when a person, I remember stories from Srila Prabhupada's times, when a person didn't bow down, Srila Prabhupada said, bow down, you know. We don't feel like it, but we must do it anyway. So what is the etiquette now when a person comes in the temple and doesn't bow down? And they're maybe, you know, like on a, you know, they want to experience everything. They're really sincere, but they don't bow down. What is our perspective on that?
I'm not in a position to judge sincerity of someone else. That I will leave to Krishna. Maybe I can speak, then other devotees may share their reflections. I can't really judge the sincerity of others. I'm not in that position. Yet, as part of the etiquette, temple etiquette, part of the instructions of Rupa Goswami, and part of the angas of worship of the Supreme Lord is dandavats, or basically offering obeisances, is basically presenting yourself in the mood of being humble in front of the Lord and showing that our body is utilized to kind of bow down in front of the Lord. If someone rejects to do that, well, he will harvest some benefit by having a darshan of the Supreme Lord or being in the environment of the temple, but maybe not the full benefit. And Ramana Singha Prabhu?
When we had the Be a Monk challenge, not the most recent, but the previous ones, I explained to one of the guests, very nice, the guy with the one leg, Will, I said, by bowing down, we're actually destroying our false ego. This is to get rid of our ego. And then he completely understood, and he said, thank you. But that's what the purpose of obeisance is to actually get rid of our pride and pride. To humble ourselves, like you said. Thank you.
That's a good point. Thank you, Prabhu. Adi Guru Prabhu?
I just read in the Shastra, there's three types of obeisances. Dandavats, bowing down, and lowering the head with hands folded. And there's shlokas describing all the points of the body that have to touch the floor.
Oh, yes.
And in our day, we never did this cross-legged obeisances. It's become a habit now. But it's actually, if you read stuff in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, if you do that, you go to hell, you know? It's very heavy. We don't read Hari Bhakti Vilas, but the slightest little thing, it's very heavy.
Actually, yes, Vishwan Chakravarti Thakur, in one of the commentaries to the Bhagavad Gita, he refers that the eight limbs which should touch the body, are seven of them are bodily features or bodily parts, and the eighth one is actually the mind. So our knees, our feet, our torso, our head, our upper arms should touch the floor, but the one of them is considered the manasa, the mind, and that should also touch the floor in the sense of you actually should be developing some kind of a mood of humility. So yes, thank you for that point. Srinivas Prabhu?
When I was in Harinam on Thursday one time, this black person approached me and he said, I like your philosophy, but I find it difficult to bow down. So I said, you have to bow down to death anyway, so better you learn to bow down to Krishna.
You have to bow down to death. That definitely leaves an imprint on him. Better bow down in life, otherwise death will force you to bow down. Yes, thank you for that point. I think Bishop Prabhu, you had also a point.
Hare Krishna. I was just going to say, relate to the etiquette point. I think obviously it comes to, if it's someone new, if someone who's been to the temple multiple times before, of just explaining it in a way that they can understand, or in a very like welcoming and encouraging way, that, you know, pay obeisances, that's what we you know, that's why we do it and what we do kind of thing. And just because, you know, I've been here for a few weeks now, and on, I think, the first few days I asked someone, you know, kind of any tips for spending some time at the manor, and they said pay obeisances as regularly as possible, as much as possible. And for two reasons. One, it reminds me, or reminds us, that we're servants of Krishna, and also reminds Krishna that I am his servant and he can engage me any way possible. And I thought really, like, that was a really nice thing. Yeah, and I feel like that was also something that one could say to a new person, and it would, you know, it'd come across in a mm-hmm. good way.
Thank you for that point, Prabhu. Yes?
Krishna, thank you for the class.
Go on, Vishal.
Just on a different topic. You're talking about samskaras. I was wondering how we can deepen our experience of samskaras while we're in the temple, how we can make it more deeper. And how can we do that?
How can we have a deeper samskaras within our staying here in the temple or living a monastic life? Well, samskara basically means an imprint. And these imprints are based on observation of where your mind is inclined to drift. So samskara means being saturated and being surrounded by certain kind of impulses which are conducive for spiritual life. So for instance, first of all, these samskaras are external. In the first kind of years of our spiritual life, these samskaras are very much external samskaras, based on things that we wear, the markings of the body that we have, based on the clothes, based on, you know, our surrounding, the smells, the food and everything. But later on, these samskaras will be self-developed, and they have to be self-developed samskaras. Basically, where is it? 262, right? I don't remember the Sanskrit, but the real term is contemplation. So contemplation also invokes, or contemplation means a samskara. It means eternal, your own developed samskara. It means that how are you contemplating upon the objects of sense gratification or objects in general? So, as I mentioned this analogy before, for instance, for a devotee sees a lighter and straight away his samskara is, oh, this may be utilized for burning the incense or burning the ghee lamp and offer it to the Lord. For someone who's another devotee, his own individual samskara will be, oh, I'm going to utilize it for inhaling variety of intoxicants. So samskara first is external, but then that samskara needs to be internalized. And you develop the terminologies udipan, right? We already discussed about this. So udipan is your own internal created informations upon that object which has a connotation with the Krishna consciousness. So first these samskaras are external, and then the samskaras become internal or internalized. Lord Chaitanya didn't need much. Like, for instance, there was the son of King Prataparudra. He was running towards him, and because he had his bodily features been very, very beautiful, Lord Chaitanya didn't need that much to remember Krishna. He saw the son of King Prataparudra, straight away he remembered Krishna. There was, again, this pastime was mentioned, I think, in Chaitanya Bhagavat. There was this lady, this mother, she was singing the glories of the Lord. She was chanting Harinam, and Lord Chaitanya heard this, and he started running towards that woman. But then, there was one personality who stopped Lord Chaitanya. Anyone knows? Was it
Govinda?
His servant Govinda. So basically, it means that any type of udipans are actually also identifying your depth of Krishna consciousness. Your levels of samskaras, or your levels of udipans, or your level of contemplation also signifies your advancement in spiritual life. Srila Prabhupada also had the same sort of field that he could see, but yet every vision, everything he saw was in connection with the Lord. Right? How many times Prabhupada was presenting Krishna conscious philosophy with such a seemingly mundane objects, yet he was teaching every single one of us how you can and how you should connect everything with the Supreme Lord via analogies, via understanding, via kind of having gratitude towards where that energy is coming from. So that's the art, and that is all based on samskaras or saturation within your own spiritual life. Thank you for that question. Smarhari Prabhu? No? Sankirtan Priya Prabhu?
Just one last point on the offering dandavats. When I was in Kartik a couple of years ago, I got the realization that just like when you plug your phone in to charge it, that's how you charge your bhakti, when you touch the ground with the seven parts of your body and your mind, as you say. That's like charging. So we should never forget the importance of that.
Plus you're rolling in the dust of the Vaishnavas.
That's how you charge your battery spiritually. Jai.
That's it. Okay, last point or last question, and I think we can finish there. Otherwise, ladies, mothers, any questions?
Hare Krishna Prabhu, nice class, thank you. Really like the point that you mentioned about the classes of devotees and the imprints that we make in our minds. We know from Shastra that amazing devotees like Bharat Maharaj and so many devotees who've had the imprints within their minds deep, deep rooted, and they were not just Uttama, they were above Uttama. But some of them have sort of wavered in their ways in terms of going towards other objects of attraction than the Lord, even though their point was to come to the Lord. So how do we then ensure that in our life, when we are practicing these devotional service practices, we don't waver in that way in order to sort of continue on our progress towards Krishna consciousness and towards the Lord?
Right, what was the question that was it Vasudev the leper, when he approached Lord Chaitanya, right? Like, you actually take away from me the something which allows me to be humble. You take away from me my udipan, which allows me to maintain the state of humility. What should I do now? So that was the question he asked to Lord Chaitanya. And the general answer was, you know, chant Hare Krishna and share and preach the philosophy of, you know, Bhakti Shastras and the Acharyas. So the only way which we can anchor ourselves and connect everything with Krishna is by contemplation, as presented in Bhagavad Gita 262, because there's the whole series of events which will take place if we have a wrong contemplation, and ultimately we will see indicators. If our contemplation is wrong, then things like anger, lust, intense desires, envy, material contamination, it will creep in. And based on our observation, we can find these indicators. But to answer your question, the main anchors of, you know, devotees is, I mean, you know, chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And reading spiritual books, associating with Vaishnavas, they can always anchor you very nicely, right? They have wonderful gift of grounding people, which is good, which I definitely need. So I would say, yeah, that's it. Vaishnava Association, Vaishnava Seva, Namaruchi, Jivadoi. These are the answers of how to maintain our stability in Krishna consciousness. There's one question there. Thank you for the question, Prabhu.
I was listening to Visheshika yesterday, and he said, he carries around in his little book this saying, I live to be corrected. And he said that really keeps him. And then someone asked him a question. He said, well, what if the person hates you? And he said, and then you learn that you don't want those qualities in you. And maybe there is, you know, something of that in you. So everything's a lesson. And if you have that attitude. And he was also talking about a service mind. He said, if you go in somewhere, and in, you know, to an occasion or something, and you're thinking about what you would like, he said, if you have an attitude of how can I serve, he he said, you'll feel completely different, and everyone in the room will notice the difference as well. So personally, I found that really practical.
I live to be corrected. I like that. That's like a sutra.
He was saying, I dare you to say it to the person next to you, especially if it's your wife, he said.
Yes, I live to be corrected. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, I like that. Good point. Thank you very much for sharing, Mataji. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granta Rachrimad Bhagavatam ki, Nitya Gaura Premanande.